The message you are about to hear is brought to you by Art Bredick. And now, Mr. Bredick.
You know, different churches have different kinds of services. You probably are aware of this, that some have what is called a high mass. And their services exhibit often elaborate forms of worship. They'll put great emphasis on their ceremonial rituals and so on. They'll often have enormous ornate altars trimmed in gold. They'll have colors of purple and red and grand flowing robes. You've probably seen this in your day. They sometimes will speak from these ostentatious platforms that are raised up high. And they'll often use elevated language, you know, and they'll talk of God and they'll say, God, you know, and it's all to do what they call a high mass. It's to look like they're doing something of real substance. And their church buildings are often gorgeous, beautiful, ostentatious as well. I remember the Crystal Cathedral in California was all glass and it was just such a beautiful building. And then there was the Pasadena Lake Avenue congregation, and the whole back wall was just covered with pipes for their organ. And I mean, when they played that organ, your chest cavity rumbled, you know. And I was working on the air conditioning there, actually. They had a really complex and very sophisticated system, and I had to tie in some of the controls with their controls. And I was talking to the man. I said, what are you working on here? And he said, well, I'm working on foggers. I said, well, what are you working on foggers for? And they said, well, they want foggers so that they'll, at a certain time when the minister walks out, he'll come in a swirl of clouds. But that's because they have what they call a high mass, where everything is kind of elevated and so on. But God's church and God's people, generally, their services are not a high mass. They would call our service a low mass because we don't emphasize the form of our service. We aren't as concerned with the form as we are the understanding and the meaning. So to some outsiders, we might look a little lackluster in the things that we do. Our services may seem plain to them, but they're not ornamental. They're not elaborate. God's church is different from that's in the world, different for a reason. And it's because the emphasis is on the message. The emphasis is on the meaning of what God says. So we have our traditions and we have our ceremonies. We have marriage ceremony, baptismal ceremonies. We have anointing for the sick. We have various holy days we observe. And we even have a tradition that's been passed down of the blessing of the children. That's something that Christ did. And so we do these things. But again, the emphasis isn't on form. It's not on the form of these ceremonies. It's on the meaning of these things. It's not how it looks when we do them. And so we care about the message. We care about the meaning. We care about understanding what we do. And we care about understanding why we do it. And so today, I want to go through one such ceremony that we do once a year. And I want to talk about its meaning. It's very simple in form. It's very humble in its form. But it's one of the most deeply profound ceremonies that we perform in our service to God over time. Every year, God's people perform what is thought by many an unusual ritual. It's strange to others, actually, I think. It's done very simply, very quietly, yet it has so much, it just has tremendous meaning for all of us that participate in it. All around the world, the people of God gather together, and then we solemnly wash one another's feet. We do this because we see it as a command from God. We're told to follow the example, Jesus Christ. We're to walk in his steps and so on. And so in John 13, we see that Jesus washed the apostles' feet. And at that time, he said, we should also do this. And The people of God therefore perform this ceremony once a year. And again, our emphasis is not on the form, but on the meaning. So when God generally does something, it's multifaceted. You know, so we don't always understand what his intention is the very first time we do it. You know, it's interesting when you and I communicate to get one message across, we're often misunderstood. Sometimes we can't even get the single message across we want to get across. But it's interesting that to me that when God does something or says something, it usually has multiple meanings within it, various layers, so that the more spiritually we become, the more spiritually we think, the more deeply we understand, and we go, oh, aha, we have the aha moment. And so it is, I believe, with this particular ceremony that we have aha moments each year that we do this. Certainly the case with the ritual or ceremony of foot washing. It is a part of Scripture that is so rich in what it teaches us. And so let's begin in John 13 and read the account there in verse 1. Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come and that he should depart out of this world unto the Father, having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them to the end. And so at this time he knew he was going to the Father. He knew he was going to be restored to the glory that he had once before. You know, he would soon reclaim his king of the universe, that position and that throne in which he ruled over his creation. He'd soon have the power, the splendor, the majesty, and all that he had before. And so it could be a time humanly, naturally, for someone to think of themselves as being great. Greatness was just around the corner. So a person could be, I mean, we tend to be vain about, I'm going to be, you know, sitting on that great throne. But Jesus didn't think that way. At the same time, Jesus knew that he was going to be betrayed. He was going to suffer one of the worst deaths that men would ever have to suffer in that death. Before that death, he would be severely beaten within an inch of his life so that he was almost unrecognizable. The natural thing for us is to focus on self, isn't it? You know, here I am going back to be with my Father and have that glory, and yet I'm going to be betrayed by one of these humans, and I'm going to be treated so terribly. So there's all kinds of emotions that might be going through our mind. But what was going through his mind? He was thinking of the apostles. He was thinking of his disciples, and he was thinking about what was in their best interest. And that's why it says he loved them to the end. So we understand that this was the Passover meal and that they were to prepare the Passover for that night, and that he said he would eat the Passover with his disciples. And he said again that, with great desire, I've desired to eat this Passover. So we know it was the Passover meal. When you put it all in the context of what the Passover represents, the supreme sacrifice of Jesus Christ and all that he would go through, I think what he did as an example for us has far more meaning than many times we think of it. So back to John again. Remember, Paul wrote that Christ is our Passover. John 13, verse 2 through 5, and supper being ended, the devil put in the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him. And Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and he was come from God and went back to God, he rose from supper and laid aside his garments, and he took a towel and girded himself. After that, he poured water in a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with a towel wherewith he was girded. And so Jesus, and to me in symbol, rose from his exalted position as our very creator, the head of the entire universe. He rose from that position. He rose from his glorious, majestic throne, and he laid aside his crown, and he laid aside his royal robe, and he laid aside the authority that he commanded. He laid aside his power and his majestic position, and he girded himself with our human nature. He took the position of a slave or servant. He took the lowest position that there is in this life. The servant had no rights whatsoever, none. And at that time, the lord of the house would often invite guests to the dinner that he was putting on. And it was the job of the lowest servant in the house to wash the feet of the guests. And so Christ took on this role, and he did it for all mankind, really. He became our servant. So Christ poured water into a basin, and likewise, he poured out his life for us. We're thereby, I think, prepared. He thereby, prepared a laver from which he would wash us clean, because we are washed by the water, by the word, it says. And there's a lesson to me in all of this, in this incredible paradox of the Creator disrobing himself and humbly washing his disciples' feet. He is showing us his way of life. He's showing us how he thinks. He's showing us how he lives, and that we are then to learn to live his way and to follow his example. This is his method of rulership. John 13, verse 6. And then he came to Simon Peter, and Peter said unto him, Lord, do you wash my feet? And Jesus answered and said unto him, What I do you know not now, but you shall know hereafter. I want you to think for a minute about Peter's experience. Exactly what did he come to understand? And why later, you see? Christ explained after he washed their feet why he did this. And so that was a certain level of understanding, certain degree, you might say. But how much do you think he understood much later? How much more do you think he understood when the cock crowed the third time? How much more when he was finally converted and filled with the Holy Spirit would he understand what Christ did? How much more after the church was he was told to feed the flock, and then the care of the churches came to him and he had to serve them? How much more did he understand? And then when he was condemned by a Roman emperor and he was crucified and he said he was not worthy to die in the same manner as his Lord, and they said, fine, and they crucified him upside down. How much more did he understand what the foot washing meant and serving others meant? We're like that, aren't we? Each year we do this, and each year we learn more. We understand more deeply what Christ's life was like and how he thought, what his values and what his standards were. Every year we do this, we come to see the way we are to live amongst one another in our lives on a day-to-day basis. So he came to understand over a long period of time, and we do too. As we live our lives and as we mature, we see different levels. We understand on different levels. You know, Matthew didn't think this was important enough to put in his gospel. And Luke didn't think it was important enough to put in his gospel. And Mark didn't think it was important enough to put in his gospel. But the famous historian Eusebius said this: the Apostle John wrote much later, and he wrote to put down in writing what the others failed to do, what was left out. And so he wrote at nearly age 100. And he wrote this for us so that we would understand this vital point. So John had learned this over a lifetime as well. And to me, the object lesson of what we do is vital. It's really crucial to our Christian lives. So over 90 years old, he realized it had to be published. And we are like him. We learn over time. We know it first in an overall sense. As it says, we see through a glass darkly. But then eventually we'll see face to face. And so it is a process of growth. A process of understanding, of coming to see more clearly. You know, we don't understand what's happening when it's happening. This is just the way we are. We're human. We're short-sighted because of our human nature. And so you and I go through trials. We go through problems and have difficulties in life. And we wonder, why is this happening to me? Why am I going through this? But then later, we can look back, and in retrospect, we go, oh, I see it now. I can see what God was doing. He was doing something with me. And that we see that we had to experience those things that we experienced. Because they were the goal. They were what built the character in us. They were what made us who we are. And they are what built the faith in Jesus and what he was doing. And so we grew in faith, experience, and understanding, starting with very little, but ending with a great deal. So when we read these scriptures, we read them each year and we understand a little bit more. And as we're converted, we understand more. And as we rehearse it from year to year, we understand more. And so each year we become more trusting in Jesus Christ. We become more trusting in his leadership and where he's taking us. And each year, we develop a better and more clear conscience and view of what foot washing really means. Later, I think when we're resurrected, we'll see that so clear. Everything was for our good. Everything that ever happened to us was for our good. And we would be so much less if those things had not happened to us that we sometimes don't want to happen. But we will see later that it was all for our good. Can you imagine, as we read in the scriptures today, if you're a mother putting your child in a basket and letting that child go down the stream, you'd never think that that would end up for good. And yet how God turned that around so she got to nurse her baby and got paid for it. That we don't see the end. We just see myopically what's happening to us right now, this minute. So we'll understand later and be deeply grateful, I'm sure. We may not understand what's going on right now because we see through a glass darkly, so we see sometimes pain, we see problems and suffering. But I say again, we can trust him. Think for a moment all he did for us. He divested himself of all his power and all his glory. And he came here and suffered that beating. And he suffered that death for each and every one of us. And he would have done it for you if you were the only one that existed on this earth. And if someone would do that for you, how much can we trust him? We don't have to have an anxious life. We don't have to. We can trust him. And so we're like the rest of God's people who have lived all down through the ages. All of us are. We live our lives myopically, and only afterwards do we see the great understanding that we have and why it was so necessary. So verse 8, none of us understand immediately, but the more we serve others, the more we come to understand. And so verse 8 says this, Peter said unto him, you shall never wash my feet. You see, just seeing the moment. He didn't see the bigger picture. So you can understand this, I think, because here's Lord and Master telling you he's going to wash your feet. I mean, it's so almost horribly reverse of what you would expect, that, you know, we're the disciples, you're the Lord, we should be doing for you. And we can see ourselves serving Christ, you know. Remember Peter, he said, I'd die for you. You know, that's what he thought. You can see why he'd wonder about this. You know, in those days, all of the rabbis expected their disciples to serve them and to take care of their everyday needs. But even then, in that day and age, the rabbis never expected them to go so low as to wash their feet. Now, here is the rabbi, the teacher, washing the students' feet. So it was wrong in Peter's mind for the greater to wash the lesser, and it's understandable. But there is something of great importance here, a sort of personal pride, too, that can take place. I mean, it goes both ways. You can say, well, you're the great one. Why should I wash your feet? You know, or I should wash your feet rather than you mine. But isn't there another point? I mean, how many of us are so filled with pride, we don't want anyone doing anything for us. We can do it ourselves, right? We don't want to take from somebody else. So, you know, so the Pope has his high mass, and he has 12 people, and he washes their feet, but nobody washes his. Because it takes humility to let somebody else wash your feet, doesn't it? And there's a beautiful lesson in that, isn't there? It's okay to get help from other people. I remember when I was a young man, the first time I had needed help from somebody, I thought this was so humiliating for me to even ask someone to help me. And that was a lesson I had to learn. It's okay. It's good. It's giving to them in a certain sense, isn't it? An opportunity to give and help and serve others. And so this is a beautiful thing. It goes both ways. And so Jesus Christ is expecting us, when we kneel down and we wash somebody else's feet, he's expecting us to look down and see him in that other person, living in that other person. And he wants us to see that as we do this ceremony that we do once a year and not take it for granted. So some don't like the sense of feeling being served. They don't want the sense, sometimes I think, of the obligation that it might bring to them in their mind. But we do have an obligation. Every one of us has an obligation. I'm going to read it here. You don't have to turn there, but in Romans 13:8, owe no man anything but to love one another, for he that loves one another has fulfilled the law. Because the law, in every way, is about love towards God and about love towards our fellow man. So every year, we wash one another's feet. We don't just wash someone else's feet. They also wash ours, and we humble ourselves by being served by them as well. And back to John 13, and in verse 8, then Peter says what he did. And then Christ answers, if I wash you not, you have no part with me. And so he's talking about the saving work that the foot washing in one sense pictures. We must all be washed by Christ at baptism. And if we aren't, we have no part with him. We have to be washed. God is holy. He is divinely pure. And because of that, there's no taint, there's no spot of turning, not the slightest bit of stain of sin in any way at all. And so he can't be in contact with us when we're filthy, when we're disgusting, and when we're in the muck and mire of our own selfishness. He cannot be with us. He has to wash us first from this, and he does that in baptism, and we are washed clean that way. So the Old Covenant, of course, had various washings that pictured this. And every religion that I've ever heard of has generally some kind of washing or cleanliness. I remember there was a guy who wrote Abernathy. He was a British man, and there was an Egyptian servant that lived with him. And he told this story. He said the servant, the Egyptian servant boy, would take his little rug, you know, and he would take it and lay it down on the floor, and then he would wash his face and his hands and his arms and his everything, every part of him he'd washed. And he'd wash himself all over again. Then he'd wash himself all over again. And only then, after the third time of washing himself, would he get down on his rug and pray to his God. We understand, we don't have to wash over and over and over and over again like that. That we have been washed once through accepting Jesus Christ, through his blood, through that he spilled out and poured out for us and washed through the baptism that we went through. And so we don't have to do it three times that way, the way this guy does. We have once, one time. I want us to hold our place there and go to Hebrews 10. We're going to come back, of course, to John 3. Let's go to Hebrews 10. Let's look at verse 22. Or let's look at 19 first. It says, therefore, having therefore, brethren, boldness to enter into the holiest by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way, which he has consecrated for us through the veil, that is to say, his flesh. And having a high priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a true heart, in full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. And we have been washed by pure water in the baptism. And we can trust in that. Back to John 13. Back to John 13. It's interesting how Peter responds when Jesus said, well, if I don't wash you, you won't have any part with me. Look how much he respected and loved Jesus Christ in his next statement. John 13. In verse 9. And Simon Peter said unto him, Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head. Wash all of me. You know, if not having a part with you is I have to let you wash me, then I want it all. You know? And we should have that attitude, shouldn't we? Whatever you have for me. Sometimes it might be good and sometimes it might seem bad or a little painful, but I want it all. I want you to make me what you are going to make me become. I want you to make me be the best I can be. I want everything you have for me. And I want it with joy and I want it with deep gratitude. And so Peter's example here, I think, is a good one for all of us. He wanted to be with Christ. And then Christ says something that I think is very, very important in verse 10. Jesus said unto him, he that is washed needs not save to wash his feet, but he's clean every whit. And you are clean, but not all. So Christ is telling Peter he only needed a localized cleaning at this point. He did not have to have his whole body cleaned. And this to me is a reference of a common practice at the time, and that is that when you went to a feast, that you would often bathe and get dressed like we do today. We get bathed and dressed. But then you would walk to the home of the person's house who you were going to attend the feast with. And that person, I mean, those persons in those days, they wore a sandal kind of shoe, and they would walk through streets that were often dusty and dirty, and they would be muddy sometimes, and you'd get some of that dirt on your feet. And so you'd be bathed, but you'd come, and your feet would be dirty. And so upon arriving, then the individual who was providing the feast would have his lowest servant out on the porch and he would wash the people's feet. And that's what Jesus was acting as that time. But I want you to think for a minute how this is an example. We're baptized and we're washed clean. But you and I walk through the roads of this life, don't we? You and I walk in a world that is filled with sin. And we get a little dirty. Some of it rubs off on us, doesn't it? Sometimes our attitudes go wrong at work. Sometimes we're watching a movie and we think, you know, maybe I shouldn't be watching this movie. But things leave an impression on us. And we get a little dirty because we walk through this world. And so in like manner, we don't need to be washed again. We don't have to be rebaptized every day or every month or every year. But we do need to have our feet cleaned as a reminder of our walk through this world and the fact that we get a little dirty in so doing so. You know, there was a sign in a car wash, I remember, in California. I used to go get my car washed there. And it said something really interesting. It said, regular washing pays off. That's a good message for us, isn't it? Because we get a little sin in our life, we do things wrong, and we have to go back and do what? Ask Christ's forgiveness. And clean us again and wash us again. Yeah. And so this is a good example and reminder of that for us, what we do each year. So we do sin, we have weaknesses, and we all make mistakes, and we do it generally on a daily basis to one degree or another. And so we have to go to Christ for his forgiveness. And when we come with him, to him, we have sin, he washes us completely, and then we need a little washing every day from our Lord and Master. John 13 and verse 12. So after he had washed their feet and had taken his garments and was set down again, he said unto them, know you what I have done unto you? That's my issue today. This is the question I want to ask all of us today. Do we understand what he has done and what he is doing? See, the Church of God doesn't have a high mass. We have a low mass. We aren't so concerned about the form. It may look silly to some. It may look dumb. What are you doing that for? I'll never forget the first time I washed feet. I was in the church a few months, and then Passover came. And they were going to have us wash feet, and I went, oh, I made a terrible mistake here. Wash feet? That's not a religious observance. And then I went on this stage, and we went behind this curtain where all the men went, and there was about a 76 or so, 78 or maybe 80-year-old black man, and he had these really unusual feet. They were all kind of had bunions on them and everything, and I washed his feet, and I began to understand. It didn't matter if he had beautiful feet or gnarly feet. It didn't matter. I had the privilege of washing this fellow brother's feet. And I came away from there so exhilarated. And here I thought it was so stupid. And then I started getting the message. This is how we are to treat each other in life. This is how we are to be with one another. So anyway, this is why John, I think, was inspired to include this in his message to us. We understand the meaning. John 13, verse 13, "You call me Master," he says, "and Lord. And you say, well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and your Master, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet." So when Christ says something like this, we do it, don't we? If he says we should do it, we're going to do it. And so the people of God have been doing this for so long. "For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done unto you. Truly, truly, I say unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord, neither he that sent greater than he that sent him. And if you know these things, happy are you if you do them." You're not going to be filled with anxiety. You're not going to be filled with frustration. You're not going to be filled with hostility. You're going to be happy. It will make you happy because you'll have faith and you'll understand what Christ is doing in our lives and what he's molding us and shaping us to be. And it will make us happy. Maybe not immediately, but it will in the long run. And so he explains this. This was shocking to them. This was stunning. The Greeks had no such teaching of humility. They had nothing like that in the world they were used to. The Pharisees? Oh, no, they were the important people. You were just the peons. They didn't have any grasp of this, and so the disciples are just shocked by it, like I was, kind of, except in a different way. But it was just shocking. What did I get myself into here? Man, I had no idea what I got myself into following Christ. I didn't know the paths I was going to go. I didn't know how drastically I would have to change and who I'd have to become. And so it is today, the same kind of thinking in our world today. The focus in the country we live in today in America is being upwardly mobile and looking down at the others. I remember that they had this ad years ago, and Imperial had come out with a car that had fins. Remember, Chevy had fins and Ford had, everybody had fins. The Imperial had these great big fins, and it was just impressive. And they had an advertisement talking about the car, and they were saying, you know, let people know who's in front of them, ahead of them. You know, show off your fins. It's another status symbol in life. But it's so much like that today. The higher the status, the more people will serve you. And so we have CEOs of corporations today that milk the corporations and get perks of millions and millions of dollars off of the work of others, even sometimes taking so much in perks that they destroy a company. But it doesn't matter to them about the jobs of the people because they're important. But Jesus is different, isn't he? It's just the other way around. The greatest will serve the most. And that's the way he thinks. So God has shown us that we are to kneel before one another's feet, humbly wash them. But you see the world today. You see that you're on a baseball team and a player is not allowed to play one game and he may pull out completely and never play again. You see it in politics. Somebody's passed over for an office and then they refuse to take a lesser office. You know, you see this over and over. You got somebody in church singing in a choir, and they say, well, I don't want you to have the solo part. Well, I'm leaving the choir then, right? You've seen this stuff happen in one form or another in your life. That's the world. That's not Christ. And that's not what this ceremony teaches us. Their attitude is, I have to have it my way or I won't play. They simply don't have a foot-washing mind. They'd never think of it, would they? But because of that, would they fit in his kingdom? No. And my question today is, will we fit in his kingdom? Do we have this kind of mentality? Do we help one another? Do we serve one another? Are we humble, or do we think we are somebody? Because none of us are anybody. Only Christ is somebody. And the only fact we have any value is what he did for us and who he is and what he did in giving us the love that he has. Anyway, you see this happen in business sometimes where the executives get so concerned, especially middle management. They're always jockeying for position. And then they want to see, well, who's better than who else and who's better. And then they get focused on how can they leverage themselves up. And they stop focusing on the job and the business can fail. And so this can even happen to a church. And I think it's happening to our particular group today, broken into little scattered groups, each arguing with one another and sometimes ridiculing each other. For this reason, Christ gave us this tremendous ceremony as a lesson to learn. He's the Lord and Master. We're the servants, but he would wash our feet. So whatever our position is, we should be willing to serve and help other people, whatever their position is, high or low. So the servant had no rights. And we really don't have any rights. He bought us. He paid for us. And we are his servants. So there should be no one we think we should criticize. There should be no one that we should call on the telephone and talk to somebody about somebody else and tell them bad things. That should never happen, should it? Ever. It's not foot washing. It isn't, you know. There should be nobody's feet that we would not wash. There should be nobody's feet we should not wash. Jesus Christ washed Peter's feet, who denied him three times. He washed the feet of Thomas, who doubted. He washed the feet of Judas, who betrayed him. Who are we to think we shouldn't wash somebody else's feet? Has anybody betrayed you? If you've lived life, somebody has. Somewhere along the line, somebody's betrayed you. Have you felt someone at work betray you? Have you felt someone in the church maybe betrayed you? How about your family? Has anybody betrayed you there? Were your parents the perfect parents? You understand my point? Who do we think we are? How do we react to these things if somebody hurts us? Are we willing to still wash their feet? It's a good question, isn't it? It really is a good question. So, you know, we all get out of joint once in a while. Right? Anybody ever get mad, frustrated a little bit? We all get out of joint a little bit. But you know, when an arm gets out of joint, you don't cut off the arm. You know? You put it back in joint. You reconcile. You love one another. And that's what we're to do. So remember, all of us get a little dirty walking in the world. And there's none of us that are really perfectly clean. And so we should humbly be willing to wash one another's feet and serve others as Christ did us. He loved his disciples to the end. In verse 34, it says this, "A new commandment I give unto you, that we love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another." Isn't that beautiful? Willing to give ourselves, even if somebody's hurt us. Yeah, the whole point of this ceremony is to show love in action. This is how God is. This is how God lives. This is how God thinks. And this is how he responds. We claim we want to be like Christ. We want to imitate him. We want to follow him. But do we follow him like this? That's the question I want us to think about today. And that's the question when we bow down before a brethren and we wash their feet. That's the question I want us to ask ourselves then. I don't want us to hurry and rush through it and get it over with. I want us to do it thoughtfully. Think about it. understand it. We only have this little space of time on earth, and there is still yet before the end a window of opportunity to be more and more like Jesus Christ. And so it says in verse 17, if you know these things, happy are you if you do them. And I'm telling you, there is a tremendous release. There's a tremendous exhilaration. There's tremendous freedom in submission and submitting to one another and serving one another. There really is. It will set you free and you will be happy. So why be angry at somebody, you know? Why do that? We can be transparent. We don't have to hold up appearances and have to keep up with the Joneses. We don't have to struggle to be something that we're really not. We can be who we really are and trust that. Christ loved us. And he would wash our feet today and does wash our feet. And we are his servants. And so we should be willing to bow and serve others. And so there is a wonderful lesson that the foot washing reflects to us each year that we do it. The foot washing is something we need to understand. It is profoundly liberating in its message. The greatness that we have is not in our position or our status. It's not in our beauty or our intelligence. It's not in any of those things. It is in the fact that he chose us and that he died for us. And so when you think about who he is, the majesty on high, and through all things were created by him and for him, the entire spiraling universe is his. And then you go the other way and look through a microscope and see the cellular structure. All that's his too. Amazing mind, the knowledge, the fullness, the wisdom of God. You see that, and he was willing to give all that up and die for us. Man, that makes us valuable. But not superior to everybody else. And so we learn this lesson every year as we keep the Passover, and every year we wash one another's feet. And it is something to remind us. When we do this, we do it one time a year. But that one time a year is to remind us of this important truth. This is how we should live every day for the rest of the year. And that's what I want us to understand. So this year, take our time, do it deliberately, and do it thoughtfully, and love our God every minute, and understand.